Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of the Aviation Fundamentals podcast. My name is Dr. Suzanne Kearns, and I'm very happy to be speaking to you today. So in this episode, I'm going to change things up a little bit, where episodes 1 and 2 really looked at supporting both teachers and students using the Fundamentals of International Aviation textbook. This episode is going to talk a little bit differently, specifically to people who might be interested in writing their own book. So over the course of writing 4 books that I've completed so far, I've learned a lot of hard lessons along the way, and I found that in my academic journey, there aren't a lot of resources out there about writing books specifically. There's a lot of support for writing academic journal articles, but books can be a bit of a mystery. So the purpose of this episode is to kind of explore the successes and failures that I've had along the way and pass along those tips. So for anybody who's sort of debating in their mind about the possibility of writing a textbook, this one's for you. My first book was a textbook called Canadian Aviation. And the way that this started is that I was a young professor, and an acquisitions editor for a publisher came and knocked on my door and they said, "Hey, are you interested in writing a book?" And that's literally how it happened. And I said, "Well, I never thought about it, but I'm teaching a first year class and there really isn't a good book that supports what I'm trying to teach. So maybe I'll take it on." So a tip for you is that if somebody knocks on your door and asks if you're interested in writing a book, and their only requirement is that you use that book in your teaching at the university, it's a good hint for you that that's probably what we call a vanity publisher. So vanity publishers can be very good publishers. It's just that they tend to publish books that support a specific outcome. So the impact may be a bit limited, the marketing budgets are limited, and probably the most important thing about this kind of book is that there isn't a peer review process. So there isn't the check and balance to ensure that what you're doing is the best it can possibly be. So I went ahead and I published that book, and for a first attempt, I was happy with it. Looking back in retrospect, there's a lot of things I would have done better now that I know more than I did at the time. But that book never really went anywhere beyond my classroom and my teaching at the university. About a year later, I was at a conference in Spain, and there was an acquisitions editor there from a publishing company at the time was called Ashgate. They've since changed or been acquired, and now they're called Routledge. But this editor and I, we sort of struck up a conversation because I had just finished a textbook and I was kind of curious how their process worked. And after he later in the conference listened to one of my presentations, he invited me to submit a proposal for a book. And so this process was very different from the previous publishing experience because the author is required to complete a fairly lengthy proposal. Sometimes those proposals will require sample chapters, and then that proposal will then be sent out for external review from a few different parties. Once you get the feedback from the review, then the author is required to implement those changes and resubmit the proposal. So I went through that process and was eventually accepted, and that turned into the book E-Learning in Aviation. So as opposed to my first book, which was a textbook, E-Learning in Aviation is very much an academic monograph. So it's an academic exploration of e-learning and how to do it well and its impact or potential to support aviation training. After that book, I have to admit, I was a little bit burnt out. I mentioned I'm never writing a book again. That was a huge project. I can't imagine doing that again. But then, of course, 18 months later or so, I had been attending conferences and over kept hearing people talking about competencies, competency-based training. And for those of you who don't know, that's the educational theory that underlies the multi-crew pilot license. And it was very clear in listening to people speak about this that it's a very important issue. And yet when you heard people speak, that everyone would kind of explain it a little bit differently. So it seemed that there was some gray area around the topic. And for myself, when I hear that, of course, a light bulb goes off in my head and I think, ooh, that's a book. And so having finished the e-learning book, and realizing the commitment that goes into writing a book by yourself, I went back to my editor at Routledge and said, is there any way we could think about using other people or having other supporters to put a book together about competencies. And he actually gave me some names of other potential co-authors, which I reached out to. And eventually, I ended up working with two gentlemen from Australia, so Dr. Timothy Maven and Dr. Stephen Hodge out of Griffith University in Australia, who were just fantastic colleagues to work with. And then collectively, we wrote the book Competency-Based Education in Aviation. It's interesting about that because these two co-authors of mine, we would Skype on a weekly basis, and over the course of a year, they grew to be very good friends of mine. And yet, to this day, we have never met in person. So they're my very best friends that I've never actually met. But I'm quite proud of that book. It's also an academic monograph, so it's exploring more of an academic issue and written in an academic tone. So finishing that book, and also because I'm a part of ICAO's Next Generation of Aviation Professionals program, which looks at how we can educate and encourage more young people to join the aviation industry, and I started reflecting on this first textbook that I wrote on Canadian aviation and thinking, is there a possibility to take a similar approach but look at it from an international perspective? So of course that grew into my Fundamentals of International Aviation textbook. Yet with this book, I decided right from the very beginning that I didn't want to just put together the content, but I really wanted to spend time and investigate everything I could about things that can be integrated into a textbook to support students' learning and teachers' teaching. So I looked into the very intense instructional design principles, what works and what doesn't. I attended several conferences specifically for textbook authors and exploring strategies about how to engage the learner and how to support the teacher. So that was a different take because in the previous books, which are very academic, the goal really isn't to support the teacher and the student. The goal is to support the academic community and sort of these other professors and researchers who are dealing with these topics. Now that this book has been published, I've accepted a bit of a different role with Routledge, and that's to be a series editor. So as a series editor, my goal is to work with other authors, people who have maybe an idea rolling around in their minds about a potential textbook that they would like to write. And as a series editor, my role is to help them structure that textbook so that it best fits the way teachers teach and students learn. So if you're interested in writing a textbook, I would welcome your proposals. You can find the proposal by doing a Google search for Aviation Fundamentals series with Routledge, the publisher. You could also send me an email or leave a question and I'll be happy to send you the proposal outline so you can draft a proposal. But in order to move forward, I'm going to give you just kind of a quick flow of the life of a book, how it typically works, and some of the pitfalls and challenges along the way. So the very first step in writing a book is coming up with an idea. And if you are interested in the Aviation Fundamentals series, probably it's an idea for an undergraduate course, so a textbook that would support teaching. And in that textbook, you have to sort of think about a few different options right from the very beginning. That is this something you want to write as a sole author, or would you be wanting to write it with co-authors? There are advantages and disadvantages of both approaches. The advantage of writing it by yourself is that you get complete control and flexibility over how you choose to structure your writing. The challenge is that, of course, it's a lot of work and a tremendous obligation. So this is something you would expect to take up a big part of your life for 1, 2, maybe even 3 years. So if that sounds like maybe it's more than the resources you have available, you can look at co-authored relationships. So for a textbook, we generally wouldn't look at what we call edited volumes, where a single editor would accept separate proposals or chapters from other authors and compile them together. So we'd really need a co-author relationship where you and somebody you're comfortable working with for a long time will work together on all of the book so that it produces a really cohesive manuscript that has a flow and a structure to it. But keep in mind that the co-author relationship can turn out really well. So my previous book, the competency book, it was a tremendous experience working with my co-authors, but there are also very negative stories out there of co-author relationships that fall apart. Sometimes they go into legal battles and they get quite messy. So if you are considering working with a co-author, you want to kind of establish, you can think of it like a prenuptial agreement at the beginning, where you lay out all of the expectations for the writing and the scheduling and what happens if people want to leave the project and all of these sort of royalty issues. So there's some templates online. If you do a Google search, you can find those, but it's a really good idea to have those discussions up front. Once you've done those things, you want to think about who's going to publish your book. So there are a lot of different publishers around the world, of course, but it's important to understand that different publishers have different things to offer. So a typical textbook publisher would have the potential to support you with e-resources or a companion website. They have global marketing and sales distribution networks. The downside is they probably offer a lower royalty than maybe a domestic publisher would. So vanity publishers, on the other hand, like my very first book I published, they actually tend to offer higher royalties, but they don't have as much impact or reach as far as the marketing, and you don't sort of get to coast on the reputation like you do with the bigger name publishers. So you want to make sure you strategically choose which publisher you want to work with. And once you've identified that publisher, you put together a proposal document. Now, it should be a red flag if a publisher agrees to offer you a contract and you haven't submitted a proposal outlining what that book is going to look like. It should be a red flag to you that that is a vanity publisher and perhaps isn't going to be the best for the impact and the application that you want to make on the industry. They may not have the reputation or the reach that you're looking for. So assuming you've identified a publisher, you've downloaded the proposal template and you're sitting down to write it, generally you can expect proposals to require you to submit the following information. So you need a working title and usually a one-page description of the big idea in your book. So what is your book doing that doesn't already exist in the market? You can expect to provide a draft table of contents, so an outline of all of the chapters in your book. You're going to need chapter synopsis as well, so maybe two or three sentences with each chapter that describe in very general sense what's going to be in those chapters. The next is the length and the schedule. So for publishers, there's a lot of decisions are made associated with how long your book is. So there are certain sort of page length landmarks that if you tend to go over those, then it increases the price of printing your textbook. So they're going to want to know how long you expect your book to be. So generally a word count and also a schedule of how long you think it's going to take you to finish that manuscript. Next, you need to define the audience. And I think this is actually a really good strategy to do no matter what kind of writing you're working on, is to kind of sit down and say, who are the readers, who are the users of this book? And make sure you know that from the very beginning so that whenever you're sitting down and writing, you have an image of the user, the reader in your mind and you're speaking to that person. And that can really help ensure that you're not going too academic or too simplistic and you're trying to hit the sweet spot where it's an engaging experience for the people you're targeting. Now, next you need to outline the competition for your book. This is actually one of the most important elements of the proposal because you need to understand that a publisher offering you a contract is very much a business-based decision. And so you really need to emphasize why you think your book is going to be successful in the marketplace. Next, you include an author biography. So you're trying to make the case that you have the background experience necessary to speak about your topic, but also that you've done some writing in the past and that this isn't going to be sort of a first-time thing, but it's something that you have some experience in. And lastly, the publishers usually appreciate if you provide a list of reviewers. Because these proposals go out for an external review, if you give them a list of people who would be good people to send this proposal to for consideration, then that's generally appreciated. And if all goes well, you will submit the proposal, it will be sent out for external review, and you'll probably get feedback in 6 to 8 weeks. If it goes well and you probably make some small revisions, you resubmit your proposal, then the publisher will offer you a contract. And at that point, the relationship is very much between the publisher and the author, and there's a negotiation process and an agreement to terms. And then once you have your contract, you're very much on your own. This is where the true nitty-gritty writing happens. And just to pass along some of the strategies that I developed when I started writing, in that with this last textbook, I committed to be very organized from the very beginning. So every single time I would sit down at my computer to write on the book, I would open a spreadsheet and I would log what time it was. And then when I was finished my writing session, I would log what time I finished, as well as some thoughts about where I was and what worked and what didn't, and strategies about what to work on next time. Now that one simple step was amazing as far as keeping me motivated. And then the next time I would sit down to write, I would also have a little note to myself about where I should be picking up. That was really helpful. Now, I've been told that that's actually maybe an archaic way to do it, that apparently there are free apps online that will track your writing for you and include word counts and how productive you were. So absolutely, if that's something you're comfortable doing, that seems like a great option as well. I once had a more seasoned author tell me that the secret to writing is butt glue, which just basically means if you can, you know, force yourself to stay in the chair long enough, that that's the hardest part. And I think really it probably is. The reality is that every academic who's written papers and dissertations and articles has all the skills they need to write a book. It's just longer. That's really the gist of it. And so it's about staying motivated and keeping to a schedule so you're committed to yourself that you're going to meet those goals. I also save all of my work into a Dropbox folder, which was very helpful because if something had gone wrong with my local computer and I lost my book, I can't imagine how negatively that would impact my life. So I just had I felt a peace of mind by knowing that my files were safe in the cloud. So whichever program you use to back up, just absolutely make sure you do that and you're very careful about it. The other thing that I tried to do with my book, which I found really helpful, was reaching out to my network. So absolutely every chapter in my most recent book, I had professionals review it and give me feedback. And I think that's a very helpful part of the journey because the traditional academic way is you write a journal article and when it's finished, you send it to a reviewer and of course they find things wrong and you rewrite it. Well, the problem is that the book may take you 2-3 years to write. You don't want to be waiting till the very end of that process to figure out that something's wrong with the process that you've established for the book. So being open with people that you trust and getting feedback, I think, is a really good strategy. And lastly, I think it's very important that you think about how to replenish. So I'm the very open in saying that when I was in the heat of writing my book, when we were sitting around the dinner table every day, I would be talking about the book and my very supportive family and husband in particular, after a while would say, "Is it possible we could talk about something other than your book tonight? Is that feasible?" But the reality just becomes such a big part of your life. So you absolutely do need to make sure you're carving out some time that's for yourself. So whether it's exercise or meditation or spending time with friends or family, whatever it is, make sure you don't feel any guilt around doing those things. It's very important to try to maintain a balance in your life. That being said, the goal that I set for myself was to write for 30 minutes every single day. And I didn't do every single day. There were certainly days that I missed, but for the most part, I was able to do that. I was able to commit to 30 minutes a day. And when you think about 30 minutes and the things you do in your day that take up 30 minutes, it's not that big of a commitment if you only think about it as that one chunk every day. And a lot of days, of course, it was much longer than that, but I felt like having that goal really did keep me motivated on the project. The next thing that's important is that you really want to make the book the absolute best that you can. The reality is that if your book is successful, it's going to speak to many more people than you will ever be able to speak with face to face. And this book is your voice. And so the only way you can improve it is to revise, revise, revise. So make sure that you are writing a book that you actually want to read. If you're reading it and you're finding, oh, this bit's a bit confusing or this bit's a bit boring, then absolutely invest the time to change it. And then lastly is that make sure you put your own ideas, philosophies, and ideas into the book. So authors kind of describe this as breathing life into the book, that you don't want to create a manual that is so technical that it contains only facts and details, that there's no story, there's no narrative, and there's no humanity involved as well. So definitely take the time to make sure that you're establishing that balance. And then when all said is done, if you've completed your manuscript, what it'll end up with is you'll have a folder that probably has 100 different files, because every chapter has to be a separate file. There's a separate file for all of the tables and a separate one for every figure and for all of the text boxes. So when I submitted my book, it was probably 200 separate files in this big folder. And you send that to the publisher, and it generally could take up to a year before the publisher converts all of those files into a finished product. The reason why is that the first step is it has to go through a copy editor, so the publisher will make sure that it's very cleanly written and free from typos and mistakes. The publisher will design the cover, and generally they'll consult with the author, so you're happy with the cover as well. The cover is really important because it really is the face and the first thing people may see is an impression of your book. And then they will go through and they will do the composition and layout. And that's where they take all of these separate files and they pull it together so it actually becomes a book in itself. So that entire process can take about a year. And for the most part, they don't involve the author too much. You'll receive the occasional email and there'll be the occasional highlight as far as seeing her cover for the first time or getting the PDF proofs for the first time of all of your work when it actually looks like a book instead of like a collection of Word documents. And then one day you will have a package on your door and you'll open it up and you will see your book as a real actual book. And of course, that's probably the most exciting day in the journey. But it's important to understand a little bit about the pricing. So the publisher actually sets the pricing for your book, and they have their own mechanisms of trying to figure out how it's going to be competitive and where it fits in the market. But it's important to understand that your royalties are a percentage of what the publisher makes rather than what the book sells for. So you have to think about it this way. If the publisher sells the book for $50, then a typical bookstore is going to mark it up 25%. So they're going to sell it for $62.50, and the bookstore will make about $12.50 from selling that book. Now the author, if you make a 10% royalty, you get that royalty off of the $50, not the $62.50. So that in that book situation, the author would be making about $5 per book, while the bookstore will be making about $12.50. It's also important to understand that you can't expect your textbook to live forever and be successful. That in general, we expect a textbook to have a life expectancy of about 3 years. So if your book is successful, you can expect the publisher to come back to you after a few years to write an updated edition. So that's something that some people see as a real advantage of writing a textbook, that it's a project they want to deeply invest in and then support for the rest of their careers. But others may see that as a disadvantage, that, you know, I want to write this book and be finished with it. I don't want to have to be responsible for updating it every 2 or 3 years for the rest of my life. So that's something to keep in mind as well. So overall, I hope that this podcast has given you some tips and strategies about what the process is like to write a textbook. If you're still interested and you're curious about the path for your book, please do consider submitting a proposal for the Aviation Fundamentals textbook series with Routledge. As a series editor, I would love to receive your proposals and talk to you more about your ideas and strategies to make the best book possible. So thank you for tuning in to episode 3 of this podcast, and I look forward to future episodes.